guides to criminal profiling and crime scene investigation. On top of them is a file folder, its thick stack of pages perilously close to sliding free, which suggests he shoved them in their current spot quickly. The top page sports a blaring headline. She can't see the whole thing, but two of the words she can see make her stomach go cold. Mask maker. Tell me he's not writing a book about serial killers, she thinks. Please, God, tell me he didn't ask me here for some kind of interview. So is Altamira Sheriff's consulting on the mask maker killings? Oh, that. No, that's just a little weekend reading. Weekend reading. Something to keep my head busy. A little amateur detective work? Yeah. He stares at the floor, swallows as if it's painful. I guess that's what I am now. An amateur detective. He says these last two words with such venom she's surprised he doesn't finish them off by spitting on the floor. Whatever his reasons for getting rejected by the FBI, he's not exactly repressing his feelings about them.
Figure you're here because Marty and I had some words yesterday, Luke says.
About me?
About a lot of things, but you came up.
And so he guilted you into this? She asks.
Into what?
Apologizing, she says.
You are going to apologize, right? Should I?
Yes, you should, she says, and takes a sip of Sprite.
I didn't expect this to be this hard.
Well, maybe it should be.
You're not going to make this easy, are you?
He asks. I'm here, aren't I?
You sure you don't want a beer?
He asks.
Do you? Yes,
he says. He ducks into the kitchen and reappears with a bottle of Heineken, wiping the evidence of his first sip from his lips with one forearm.
You're enjoying this, he asks.
What?
You're smiling, he says.
I am? Luke nods and takes another sip of beer. Sorry, she says. It's been a crazy few days.
Is that what the name change is about?
He asks. The name change is a year old. And even that's more than you should say to him right now.
I'm gonna do this, Charlie.
Do what? Apologize?
Yeah, I'm just...
You're just what? She asks. Working up the nerve?
Marty, he...
He what?
I don't know, he told me apologies are all bullshit. But they're just things we say to make ourselves feel better, and so I guess I'm trying for more here.
Okay. You know what might make this easier? For you, I mean.
What?
You could ask me what I think you should apologize for, she says. Luke stares at her as if she's an oncoming train. He swallows.
Okay.
But he says nothing, and the silence between them extends. Are you gonna ask me, Luke?
What would you like me to apologize for, Charlie?
Can I sit down?
Of course,
he says. She takes a seat on the sofa's edge, her eyes level with the file on the mask maker. Here's the thing, she says. She's not measuring her words, and this makes her wonder if the drug's giving her confidence. Not through its chemistry, but through the knowledge that it's there, waiting to deploy if she's attacked. There was like a day or two, when I first got here, after school started, where I thought things might be normal. I think some of it was because I was older and I looked different from the girl on the book covers. It had been a year since I'd done an appearance or an interview or anything like that, and I thought, wow, maybe, just maybe, for these last 2 years of high school, I'm going to get a taste. A taste of what everyone else has gotten. A taste of normal. And then you started up. European history, last period. I got called on and you didn't. Then you tried to jump in on me, but you didn't know the answer, and so Ms. Stockton told you to be quiet, and you got embarrassed. And that's when it all began. Every day. Every time we were together, every chance you got. Nobody in that school called me Burning Girl until you did, and once you started, they never stopped. And I guess what I want to know is why.
He's staring into his beer bottle, circling the rim with one finger. His breaths are labored things that make his chest rise and fall, but it sounds like he's drawing them through his nose. Right now, his jaw's entirely too tense for him to breathe through his mouth.
I was afraid of you, he finally says.
Jesus! Really?
No, I didn't think you were some serial killer. I could tell you were a good person.
Oh, okay.
Look, this is going to sound ridiculous.
Ridiculous?
Lame. It's gonna sound lame, all right? And it's gonna sound like an excuse, and I don't want it to, but...
Just say it, Luke.
My mother. Before she got sick, she didn't want me to leave. She wanted me to stay here and take care of her. My brother, we all knew he wasn't the caretaker type. You have to actually care about things that don't have circuit boards. Anyway, he was already on his way to... I don't know what. The point is, there was only one way my mother was going to let me get out of Altamira, and that was if I was the best fucking student at Los Pasos High ever. And I was. Until you showed up. It was like, whatever you'd been through, it just made you more grown up. I could memorize anything, but you had this ability to reason through stuff the rest of us didn't have.
I didn't stop you from getting good grades, Luke.
No, you didn't. But that was just half of it. I needed everyone at that school to think I was the smartest one in the room. I needed the guidance counselor to lean on my mother every day and tell her to let me go. Let me get out of here and make a life for myself. To tell her to stop falling apart every time I talked about going off to a school that wasn't right down the highway. And then...
She died, Charlotte says, as gently as she can.
Yeah. And part of me thought I was being punished.
Punished?
For the way I'd treated you.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, for a while there after my mother died, that's what I was. Crazy.
She's not sure what she expected him to say, but it sure as hell isn't this. These are the words of someone who's been through the pressure cooker of grief and has come out irreparably changed. Someone like me. How's your brother? She didn't mean to strike a blow, but that's how Luke seems to receive the question. His previous admission rendered him vulnerable, and now he doesn't have the energy to put his guard back up. He's staring into space, like he's forgotten about his beer, even though he's gripping the bottle by the base with both hands. Luke?
I'm sorry.
She's not sure if he's apologizing for drifting off, or for the way he once treated her. And for a while it seems like he's not sure either, because he just keeps staring at nothing. There's a part of her that's hungry for any apology he's willing to give. But this reaction to the mention of his brother is so startling, she can't imagine leaving this house before she's made some sense of it. If she can get some actual facts out of Luke, maybe she can convince Marty to let this whole thing go, and they can focus on whatever's next. Luke?
I'm sorry for the way I treated you back then. I'm sorry for the type of person I was. And I'm sorry...
What?
Nothing.
No, tell me.
I was gonna say, I'm sorry the type of person I was then made me end up where I am now, but that's making it about me, isn't it? I mean, that's selfish. And I really did want this to be about you.
He forces a smile, looks up from his feet. When their eyes meet,
His smile fades as if the sudden shock of meeting her gaze has produced the same electrical charge in him that it just did within her. She hates the thought that she's enjoying his pain, his humility, his brokenness, even though she's sure all those things stem from more than this meeting and their pained history together. Still, God forbid she be attracted to the idea of any kind of suffering in anyone. She plans to hold on to that moment when she recoiled from Jason's broken shoulder, the shoulder she broke, for as long as she can. But who wouldn't want to hear this kind of stuff out of one of their former bullies? He was never violent with her, never threatened her physically. But he did create an atmosphere of hostility and suspicion that dogged her every step for 2 years. By itself, his behavior seemed insignificant, so if she ever complained, people would tell her to get over it. They were just comments, just words. But when you're forced to hear the words almost every day, don't they add up to something bigger? A sort of crime unto itself. Death by a thousand cuts, as some people like to say. Now, against her will, she's thinking of Dylan. Of a conversation they'd had in his office weeks before, about how people who've been through serious, violent trauma often tend to discount the smaller abuses they face. Dylan compared this to people who literally can't feel physical pain. It sounds like a blessing until you remember that pain is designed to protect. To save your skin from the flame, your bone from the pose that might snap it. And once it's gone, you can do fatal damage to yourself without realizing it. He saw this as a metaphor for how people who'd been through extreme instances of abuse sometimes lost the ability to detect the smaller abuses, the signs that someone wasn't truly loving or a good match. It's why it could be so hard for them to build lives better than what they'd been through, so hard for them to move on. By that logic, refusing to sweep Luke's past behavior under the rug was a good thing. A healthy thing. A good thing according to Dylan, she thinks. And who is Dylan again, exactly? The thought makes her jump. Luke flinches at the sight of it. Maybe he wasn't a real psychiatrist. Maybe he was able to deceive her because he spoke with the authority of someone who understood darkness. Not because he had studied it, but because he'd lived through it himself. She closes her eyes. Too much. It's too much to think about Dylan right now. Hey, Luke says softly. It's a mistake, looking into his eyes. A mistake to wonder if his pain, his contrition, is making him even more attractive to her. And it's true now, she realizes. That his insults, his bullying, hurt more than they would have if they'd been inflicted on her by someone who had seemed less confident and less comfortable in his own skin, despite his recent admission to the contrary. I didn't kill anyone on that farm. Her vision mists. She'd hoped a good night's sleep would help keep her emotions in check, but no such luck. I was 7. I never even saw any of the victims. Luke nods. I know, he says quietly. And I'm sorry if I ever made anyone think otherwise. It's exactly what she needed to hear. It's exactly what she's always wanted to hear from him. She's on the verge of asking for a tissue, but when she blinks a few times, the tears don't spill. And if there's anything I can do, Luke says, and it's clear he's rehearsed this part. To make up for it, let me know. Tell me what's going on with your brother, she says. You looked like you got hit by a truck when I asked about him. It's messy, he says slowly, then takes a slug of beer. And the rest of this isn't? She smiles, hoping it'll take some of the edge off her words. It does, apparently, because he smiles back, and studies her for a second or two with an expression she'd describe as almost wistful. My brother hacks computer systems the way some of us have too much to drink on Saturday nights, he says. You know that, right?
I remember some antics, yes. Yeah, everyone remembers that prank he pulled, hacking the Copper Pot's phone lines and sending calls to that manure store, but since then he's graduated to bigger stuff. That's not all of it, or else Luke wouldn't be clearing his throat and studying the wall behind her, and shifting his weight from one foot to the other as though the whole story's trying to worm its way out of his stomach like bad gas. Charlotte says, "So is that really all there is?"
He was taking classes at a small community college down in L.A. Night classes, mostly, business administration, that kind of thing. I guess the idea was he was going to go do something with computers, but legit, you know? Like, start his own consulting business or something. Anyway, one day the dean of the school up and disappears, and he takes most of the tuition money with him. School's so broke they have to shut down. I mean, it wasn't a big operation to begin with, but it was what Bailey could afford. It was the best most of the students could afford. Cheap enough that they didn't have to take out loans, but expensive enough that they had to work a bunch of jobs first and save. But the whole thing turned out to be a racket, and the dean was planning it for years. When Bailey called, he was furious, angrier than I'd ever heard him. It was like he'd made this attempt to be an honest, upstanding person, and this asshole fucked him over, along with all the other students who had already paid for the year. I tried to calm him down, told him he could come up to San Francisco and crash with me for a while, just until he figured things out. And he did come up for a visit, but he only stayed for a day, and it was... Well, now I see it was kind of his way of saying goodbye.
Goodbye? Charlotte asks.
He said he was going to do some traveling, try to figure out what he was going to do next, and I probably wouldn't hear from him for a while. The last time I got on his ass about hacking, I didn't hear from him for months, so this time I held my tongue, told him to do what he needed to do. A few weeks later, they found the dean of that school living under an alias in Australia. I didn't connect the two until...
Until what?
My final FBI interview.
She was starting to put the pieces together, but didn't want to put words in Luke's mouth, so she kept silent, nodding to indicate her understanding.
So, my first interview goes well, I think. I mean, why shouldn't it? I'm crazy qualified, and I'm exactly what they need. Someone proficient in multiple languages. I figure I'm a lock. But then this agent I've never seen before walks into the room and orders everyone else out. Agent Rom, that was his name. Big guy. Deep voice, southern accent. Kind of like Foghorn Leghorn. He tells me I've only got a 30% chance of making it to the academy at Quantico, but there's a real easy way for me to make it 90%. Or he thought it was easy, at least.
Charlotte just nods.
He said I could inform on my brother, who was now one of the most wanted cybercriminals in the United States.
The dean, Charlotte says.
Yeah. Bailey's the one who found the dean. And the stolen money. Even though law enforcement was taking all the credit, Bailey shipped them everything they needed to find the guy, then he fled the country. Meanwhile, the feds took credit for the arrest, and now they want to put my brother in handcuffs because he hacked, like... a dozen different companies to do it. But I think it was the satellite company that probably put him over the top.
Your brother hacked a satellite? Luke nods and takes a slug of beer. Did he tell the FBI it was him when he sent them the evidence? Charlotte asks.
No. But he slipped up, apparently, because something was traceable back to him. Rom wouldn't tell me what it was. Could have been powers of deduction, like they looked at the list of students who got ripped off, and there were only one or two who were real good at computers. And then there was one who was real good at computers, and that was Bailey. I wasn't in much of a position to ask questions. The only thing Agent Rom would tell me is that my only shot at the FBI would be if I ratted out my brother.
And what did you say? Luke meets her gaze.
I told him to go fuck himself with an umbrella.
Literally?
Word for word. If I'd had an umbrella, I would have given it to him, but it was sunny out that day.
Charlotte smiles. And what did he say to that?
He said I'd never get a job in government or any law enforcement agency outside of some rinky-dink small-town police department for as long as I lived. Those were his exact words, by the way, rinky-dink.
And so you went and got a job at the first rinky-dink small-town police department you could find.
Yep,
he says, and his smile seems genuine.
I showed him, right?
For some reason, this story means so much more than his apology. It's proof, she realizes, that he's a changed man, that he was willing to give up his lifelong dream rather than betray his family. His only family. That's not the Luke Prescott she knew in high school. But it's the Luke Prescott standing before her now, a man dealing head-on with the sacrifices loyalty entails.
What?
He asks suddenly. What do you mean? She asks.
Your face. I don't know, your expression. I'm just...
Just what?
I can't read it.
I'm impressed. He stares at her for a while, and then his entire frame seems to relax, and she wonders if this is the first time he's talked about this with anyone. If her words are the first nice thing anyone said about the sacrifice he made for his brother. Only then does it dawn on her how truly alone he is. A few days earlier, she would have described herself as alone. Not lonely, but alone. And by choice. But when she needed help, she had no trouble drawing people around her who cared about her. Kayla, and then Marty, and now Marty's posse of 12-steppers. And now Luke? She asks herself. No, that's crazy. Luke is just a down-on-his-luck guy looking to make some kind of amends that will smooth his homecoming. But that thing he said, though. If there's anything I can do to make up for it, let me know. Would it be so bad having a cop on her side right now? Especially a smart, highly educated one, who reads textbooks on profiling and crime scene investigation? Or a hacker who can find people living off the grid on the other side of the world? Could the same hacker tell her everything she wanted to know about someone who had lied to her about who he was?
Where'd you go?
Luke asks. Excuse me?
It's like I lost you there for a second.
You did, kinda.
Can I ask a question now?
He says. Shoot.
You don't live around here anymore, do you?
She doesn't answer.
And you're back, but Marty says you don't have much time. And you changed your name. So, what's going on?
It's been a busy couple of days. Luke nods, but he's clearly disappointed in her answer. My turn, she says.
Yeah, okay, I guess we can pretend that was quid pro quo.
You said if there was anything you can do to help, to let you know. How serious were you?
Serious, but...
When was the last time you heard from your brother? She asks. Luke takes a careful sip of beer, staring at her while he does so.
Why?
He asks once he swallows. Because I need his help. The struggle inside him is almost painful to see. The war between his desire to make good on his word to her and his desire to guard his family's secret. I need to find someone. And if your brother can hack a satellite, he can find anyone, right? Luke's mouth opens to protest. Just then, the alarm panel next to the front door releases a shrill series of beeps. It doesn't sound like any alarm or warning she's ever heard. It's almost musical. A two-tone pattern that repeats again and again, more mischievous than threatening. Luke dives into the kitchen and returns with his gun drawn. That's when she sees the computer monitor in the front room, flashing black and white, in a rhythm that matches the alarm's maddening song. Luke advances on the panel, gun drawn, then lowers it when he reads whatever's on the display. A second version of the chirping tune starts up somewhere close by, accompanied by the familiar sound of a cell phone vibrating against a wooden table. In any other circumstance, It would be intolerably rude of her to pick up Luke's phone and read the display, but this is a special circumstance for sure. The words she sees flashing across the screen are the same that are now flashing across the monitor. And when she joins Luke in the foyer, she sees the same words scrolling across the alarm panel's display. Yes, I can, 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 yes, I can.
22. Luke's musical tastes don't get any harder than classic rock, so he's not surprised the alarm's shrill song makes him want to cover his ears with both hands. But damn if he's actually going to do that in front of Charlie. He couldn't if he wanted to, because he's still got his gun in hand. What the hell? He cries. I'm a grown-up, Charlie says. You can curse. She turns from the alarm panel and advances on his computer. He follows. Last time you saw your brother, did you go to the bathroom at all? Charlie cries over the racket. My brother and I don't go to the bathroom together. That's not what I'm asking, she shouts. I can't think with this damn noise. Stop it, Bailey, she shouts.
And just like that, the music stops.
The message on the computer screen freezes, the words blaring, yes, I can. A glance over his shoulder confirms the burglar alarm's display panel holds the same freeze frame. Luke places the gun on its side next to the keyboard, muzzle pointed at the wall. He's not sure what startled him more, the fact that the crazy music just stopped, or that Charlie was so confident his brother was the composer. Your phone, Charlie says, but she's scanning their surroundings now.
What about it?
Did you leave it alone with your brother the last time you saw him?
I don't know.
He probably put some kind of malware on it so he could spy on you. Then he used it to hack your Wi-Fi here at the house. In response, three quick beeps come from the alarm system. The message on the computer screen is quickly replaced with one that says, Bingo.
You know about this stuff?
He asks. I'm not an expert like your brother, but we used to get hacked a bunch when I lived with my dad. There were a lot of asswipes on the internet who thought I was lying about not killing anyone on the farm. I had to learn how to protect myself. He keeps his mouth shut. She probably doesn't mean it as a dig, but he's embarrassed nonetheless. How many times back in high school did he vaguely imply she might have been changed by her time with the Bannings? More than once, that's for sure. And this is who that bullshit put him in league with. Hackers. Focus, he tells himself, as if his brain wasn't already overloaded from Trina's. Charlie, 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 he corrects himself. Visit. The knowledge that Bailey's been watching his every move makes his pulse roar and his head spin, which seems to him like a good combination for a heart attack.
Spy on me, Luke whispers. He was spying.
He turns to the computer and the tiny camera embedded in the top of the monitor.
You were spying on me?
The message on screen is replaced by a series of Z's emerging from the bottom of the screen, increasing in size as they drift upward, the universal sign for snoring. Obviously you all don't have the same taste in TV shows, Charlie says.
You couldn't tell me you were alive, but you were spying on me the whole time? That's awesome, dude. That's just fucking awesome.
Luke?
What, you told me I could curse?
It's the volume. Marty's outside. Just then a crude outline of a clock appears on the screen. A red line slashes through it. All of this happens on a black background that seems to have wiped all personal touches from the computer monitor. Luke somehow finds that more unnerving than having his privacy invaded. There should be relief in here somewhere. Relief that Bailey's alive and safe. But where's the apology? He's not seeing the emoji for one slide across the screen, so he figures he's got the right to be pissed. For now. No time, Charlotte says. He's saying no time. No time for what?
The clock with the red line through it is replaced by a cartoon of a woman with thick-framed cat-eye glasses and a bun on her head. She grows in size until she's revealed to be pushing a rack full of books.
Librarian?
Luke asks. He doesn't want us to keep talking to him on your computer, Charlotte says. He wants us on a public server. Best place would be a library, hence the librarian. Three beeps from the alarm system again. Where's the nearest library? She asks.
Paso Robles. I'm gonna ask you again how you know so much about this stuff.
Change your identity and you learn a few things. Wait, Charlie says, with enough volume to suggest she's talking to Bailey directly. The screen goes black. My question, she says. The one about you being able to find anyone? Was that what you were answering?
Yes, comes the flashing response.
Okay, Charlie answers.
So you're offering to help me?
The word on screen stays solid, but a red stream moves through each individual letter, almost like neon coming to life. Why? She asks. We barely know each other. There's a second or two of silence. Amid his anger, Luke feels a twinge of sadness over the thought that his sudden connection with Bailey might have just been severed. As he's about to call out to his brother, new words appear on the screen, letter by letter. The font is even typewriter style. Anyone who can make my brother apologize for something is fine with me. Charlie's laughter dies when she sees Luke's glare. The message vanishes. It's replaced by www.chateeur.ro. Pen, Charlotte says. Luke reaches into the drawer and hands her one, along with a post-it note. But no way is he writing down the URL himself. So what if his refusal to do so makes him feel like a stubborn 8-year-old? He's got a right to be pissed, doesn't he? And it's got nothing to do with Agent Rom or the FBI or anything Bailey might have done in the past. It's the silence since. It's the fact that Bailey never let him know he was okay. The URL vanishes. It's replaced by the words, "Go in hot." Then the computer screen returns to normal, a spray of icons over a shot of AT&T Park mid-Giants game. The alarm system even lets out a weak, strained chirp, like whatever Bailey's done is the equivalent of a stopper being pulled from a drain. Charlie tears the post-it note from the pad, folds it neatly in half. She appears gripped by excitement, but when their eyes meet, she blushes in a way he'd find undeniably cute in any other circumstance.
Go in hot? Luke asks. What does that mean?
Pick a screen name that's got something to do with fire. Or burning girl, I guess.
I assume you're gonna come with me. Yeah, I am.
Okay, well, let me just tell... When she turns from him, he grabs her by the shoulder, not thinking too hard. She spins. Her eyes lock on the hand he's gripping her shoulder with. He removes it quickly, even manages to spread his fingers in a silent gesture of apology. But he's not sorry he stopped her hasty escape from the house. And she seems more fascinated by his sudden grab than angered by it. Which is odd.
But all of this is odd. Look, you may not think I'm in a position to ask a lot from you right now, but he's my brother. Marty cannot know about this, like, at all.
He can see a flash of some kind of struggle in her expression, but she hides it quickly under a tense mask, looks to the hardwood floor between them, her fist closing around the folded-over post-it note.
Charlie, it's obvious you're in some kind of trouble, and I can tell he's watching out for you, and that's great. But he doesn't like me, and we've already been at each other's throats once this week, and I just... He can't know about this. Please?
What if he follows us to the library but doesn't go inside? And I don't tell him what we're doing there?
You really think he'll think we went there to check out some books?
He'll know we're there for the computers, and he'll probably connect it up with that thing my brother did with the manure store in high school.
You're being paranoid, Luke.
My brother's wanted by the FBI, and he's been secretly watching me move around my house for months.
But Marty doesn't have anything to do with that.
I know, and I want to keep it that way.
She stares at him, not aggressive or fearful, calculating. Whether she's assessing him or the situation, he's not sure.
What kind of trouble are you in, Charlie?
The big kind.
And you honestly think Bailey can help?
Maybe, yeah.
Can I?
I don't know, can you? He's not sure exactly what she means, but he's surprised by how quickly he made the offer. Big trouble usually means trouble with the law. Only once she turned his question around on him did he wonder if that might be the nature of her dilemma. If she's on the run for something she's done, as opposed to from someone who wants to hurt her. He has a badge now. Not the government-issued one he'd always dreamed of having, but it's still a badge. But in this moment, it feels no more meaningful to him than a child's toy. Did Agent Rom leave him that angry and jaded, with that little respect for the law, for the system? The answer comes out of him before he can stop it.
I can try, if you let me.
So you're saying I should milk this apology thing for all it's worth?
Something like that, yeah,
he answers. Okay, fine. No Marty. With that, she turns and heads for the door. When she realizes he hasn't followed, she looks back, sees him in the kitchen strapping on the holster for his gun. The expression she gives the weapon in his hand is almost wistful, like she thinks he's cute for bringing it along.
A date?
Marty asks.
Really? Right now?
It's not a date, Charlotte hisses. And if you say that one more time, I will reach through this...
You're going off alone with him. You won't say where. What the hell else could it be except for a date?
She grips the edge of the truck's open window, glances back to where Luke is sliding behind the wheel of his black Jeep Wrangler, avoiding, on purpose, she assumes, her pointed glares. How could he put her in this position? Simple, she thinks. Because it's his brother. That's how.
If I follow, what's he gonna do?
Marty asks.
Have me arrested?
Probably not.
But I'm following.
He'll probably take me in for questioning.
For what? How much did you tell him?
Marty, just... please. I need you to trust me on this one. He lets out a long, hissing breath between clenched teeth, shakes his head. When we get back, maybe we can all sit down and have a meal together and you two can bury the hatchet or something. Or, you know, do what men do when they've been bumping chests so much their backs are starting to get sore. Like yoga.
My back's fine,
Marty says, voice low and growl adjacent.
And this isn't about me.
It is, though. Whatever words you guys had the other day, they've got you confused. Got you confusing your ego with your brains, she wants to say.
So you trust him? You don't think he's part of this?
I think he's about to become part of this if his brother turns out to be helpful. But you can't know that yet. Instead, she says, maybe. We'll see. I'm still figuring it out. Marty shakes his head and stares out the windshield. Besides, Charlotte says, it's not like I won't be able to protect myself if I'm wrong.
Pill's been sitting in your system for how long now? For all we know, it might wear off if you don't, you know, activate it in time. There's too damn much we don't know about this stuff.
I agree, she says.
Yeah, sure you do.
Marty... he checks the dashboard clock. It's almost 1 p.m. She feels an ultimatum coming.
If you all aren't back by 6 this evening, I'm gonna consider you a missing person and make sure Mona believes it too.
and I'll be damn sure to let her know you were last seen with her shiny new deputy.
Fine.
And I'm gonna take that video we made last night to the FBI and tell them everything you told me.
No, you're not.
Excuse me?
You're not, because you can't. I've got the thumb drive we put it on this morning.
You didn't... But the... Crap. You deleted the original off my phone when I wasn't looking. Slick, girly, real slick.
Girly? Really? He glares straight ahead, hands tensing and untensing at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel.
Starting to feel unappreciated,
he says quietly. Feel something else.
What?
Spared. He looks her in the eye, expression doleful.
Maybe I don't want to be spared all this.
She leans in, kisses him on the cheek. He's clearing his throat, preparing to say something else maudlin but kind, she's sure. But just then, she reaches across him and pulls Jason Briffle's disposable cell from the armrest. His eyes widen and his jaw gapes when he realizes she's just swiped his last possible bargaining chip.
6 o'clock,
he calls after her.
First part of what I said still stands. If you're not back by 6, I...
6 o'clock, she calls back. When Luke starts the Jeep's engine, Marty fires up his truck a second later. For a minute or two, it seems as if the men's vehicles are conducting a little battle of the bands over her. Then Marty peels off down the street, making the biggest show of not following her that he can.
How'd it go?
Luke asks when she climbs inside his Jeep. Not well, she answers. He nods and backs out of the driveway.
Well, I appreciate it,
he says a few minutes later, as if no time has passed between her comment and his response, a sure sign he's measuring his words carefully. Would he be measuring them this carefully if his brother hadn't decided to make a surprise appearance during their reunion?
What's that?
He asks, eyes on the phone resting in her lap. It's a phone.
I know that.
I'm expecting a call on it. At some point, I think.
Okay.
Up ahead, Marty takes a sharp left into the middle of town. She can't help but watch his truck as they fly past. Maybe she's afraid he's going to double back and land on their tail. Or maybe she feels a stab of guilt at having left his protection against his wishes, especially after he dropped everything for her.
He's a good guy, isn't he?
Luke asks. She's startled he's read her thoughts, until she realizes it's not that hard for him to tell what she's looking at. No doubt her expression's far from serene. He is, she says. But it sounds like you didn't think so yesterday.
We had a thing.
What kind of thing?
What's it matter? It's the reason you and I got to talk today, and that means it's ultimately a good thing, right?
Is it? He blushes. It looks good on him. Again. But she's always been attracted to any small sign of vulnerability in a man who works hard to look strong. Her kryptonite would be a calendar of nothing but shirtless firemen cooing over kittens. But she's got more experience with calendars of men than actual men, which is why the thought of playfully drawing attention to the bands of pink on his right cheek and jaw makes her both dizzy and nauseated at the same time.
Well,
he finally says.
You're the reason my brother decided to break radio silence after a year, so I guess that's good for me, right?
Yeah, that's gotta sting a little.
More than a little. But I appreciate your understanding.
Sure. So which way are you gonna go?
The 101.
I wish you wouldn't, she says.
Really?
Can you take Bennett Road around the fort? That should get us there, right?
And it'll add about 45 minutes to the trip.
Library's open till 5, right? As he slows and shifts lanes to avoid leaving the valley, he gives her a long, stony look. Scans her from head to toe, it seems. Only then does she remember she's got the URL for the chat room where they're supposed to meet Bailey written on a post-it note in her pocket. And unless Luke memorized the thing when she wrote it down, the note's the only connection he has to his brother. She didn't set it up that way, but it's how things are. For now. A few minutes later, they're heading south on Bennett Road, past horse farms and spreading oaks and golden fields.
"You couldn't have traveled back road and surface streets the whole way here," he says.
"Says who? You don't know where I was coming from. But, you know, nice try trying to get me to tell you." His tongue makes a lump under his upper lip, and it's clear he's trying not to smile.
"You really afraid of freeways right now?"
he asks, after a brief silence. "I'm limiting my use, not the same thing. You know, it's like the option on the GPS, avoid freeway usage or whatever."
"I've heard of it. But most people don't use it to run from the cops."
"I'm not either, I think."
"Good thing, 'cause you're riding with one."
"Yeah, and he didn't stop to ask me what kind of trouble I was in before he got in the car with me," she says.
"I did, though."
"Did not."
"Did. I asked what kind, and you said big," he says.
"And that was good enough for you," she asks.
"I'm here, aren't I?"
She looks at him until he feels the force of her stare and glances in her direction.
"What?"
he asks. "Are you just going to keep asking me random rhetorical questions until I give you the information you want?"
"They're not random. And only one was rhetorical."
"The last one."
"Right, the last one."
She looks out the window, amazed suddenly to be back in this familiar valley. It's like the past couple of days have blown the newer layers of sand and grit from her life, leaving only the rocky fundamentals underneath.
Or some crazy rearrangement of them.
Her grandmother's on-again, off-again boyfriend is now her temperamental bodyguard. Her former bully blushes in her presence when she teases him, while chauffeuring her places. Maybe this is what growing up feels like for people whose lives aren't marred by serial killers and stalkers. Things shift underfoot only slightly. Some people remain, but change roles. And maybe this is exactly what Dylan wanted, she thinks. For me to go home again, back to Altamira. Why?
Charlie?
Yeah?
You don't have to tell me who's after you, but tell me this.
He waits until she turns her attention to him.
Is it who you're going to ask my brother to find?
Something like that, yeah. Luke nods. If he's about to say anything else, it's cut off by the chirping sound that suddenly fills the Jeep. Jason's phone is ringing. "Pull over," she says. 23.
"Charlotte?"
She walks slowly toward the shade offered by the nearest oak tree, her heart's pounding from the sound of Dylan's voice. It's filled her with all the feelings his drug relieved her of the night before, and the night before that. Made her feel weak, flushed, and powerless. Will a simple conversation with Dylan be enough to set her recent dose of Zyprexin, almost an hour old by now, loose in her system? As if any conversation between her and Dylan will ever be simple again. They never were. Once inside the tree's umbrella of shade, she turns, sees Luke standing in front of his Jeep. Steadily, he looks back and forth in both directions along the empty two-lane blacktop, his hand resting against his gun hip protectively. Protecting her, it seems. That's a comfort, at least.
"Charlotte," Dylan says.
"I'm here."
"Looks like you're building some sort of team. Are you sure you can trust them?"
She scans the empty fields, the mountains on either side of the valley. They're in the middle of someone's definition of nowhere, but he can see her. "Trust is important," she manages.
In certain situations, yes.
But not in ours?
I'm here for you, Charlie. I've always been here for you.
Always?
From the beginning of our relationship, I mean.
You call this a relationship?
She asks. Of course it is. Not all relationships are sexual.
I'm asking about your relationship to the concept of trust, she says.
Ah, I see.
Do you? Do you see me right now? Is that how you know I'm not alone?
I thought Altamira would be your last choice, to be frank. But I guess it makes sense. So what did it come down to, the choice between San Francisco or your old hometown, or the choice between Kayla and Marty? This is a safe guess based on what he knows about her, the fact that she'd call Kayla or Marty for help. Maybe she's overreacting. So where are you headed now? An overnight in Cambria, maybe a nice little bed and breakfast close to the beach with your handsome new friend? You might want to give him permission to relieve himself. He's looking a little shifty, if you get my drift.
Sure enough, Luke is pacing slowly on the roadside of the jeep. He must be wondering what the hell he's gotten himself into. But from a distance, he probably looks exactly like someone who needs to pee. Jesus Christ.
The wind knocked out of her, she looks to the sky, to the fibrous strands of clouds threaded across the dome of blue. She's thinking of satellites and drones and all the other so-called technological marvels shrinking the world down to a screen. Somehow, Dylan has access to such tools. But then she realizes what he doesn't seem to know. Like the fact that she and Luke are headed for a library in Paso Robles, or what they talked about with Bailey before they left. Or who Luke even is. Or maybe he does, and he's holding it back to see how much she'll tell him. Or worse, he'll learn those things in time now that he's caught up to her. Trust is one of those words that's lost its meaning, don't you think? He says. It used to mean the ability to keep a secret when someone asked you to. Now it's an unreasonable request we make of people we're trying to control, a demand that they buy into our illusions of who we are, that they never question our fantasies, that they never introduce anything into our world that upsets us, changes us, educates us.
You're a sociopath.
Maybe, but I get a lot done.
Who are you?
You can tell Kayla to stop digging into my past. She won't find much. Not the juicy stuff, anyway. And as I'm sure you know, the best cover stories are as close to the truth as you can make them. I only told you one real lie, Charlie. My last name. The rest? Well, they were sins of omission, mostly. And let's just say none of the work I did on behalf of Uncle Sam is sitting on a server waiting for a diligent lawyer to find it.
Is that who helped you track me to the middle of an empty field, the military?
His laughter is gentle. Oh, no. I've traded up from the military. Way up.
But you're still afraid to confront me face to face? And so are they, apparently, whoever the hell they are. What with my ability to break their arms and all.
I see. So you've taken it again, have you? Is that what you did last night? Break some arms? Did they deserve it, at least?
Wouldn't you know if I had?
Silence. She just scored a point without meaning to. He doesn't know. So whatever the net of surveillance he's thrown around her and Kayla and Luke and Marty, it's got gaps. Limits. Or maybe there was a delay. Maybe he didn't pick her up until she reached Altamira.
A penny for your thoughts, Dylan says.
I've given you more of my thoughts than you had any right to.
We're not out to hurt you, Charlie. Not me, not the people I'm working with.
Safe to say, you and I have very different definitions of the word hurt. And maybe every other word in the dictionary.
Perhaps, but you're too valuable to us now. Jason Briffle, on the other hand,
He was out to hurt you, and I took care of him as promised. I never made you promise to kill him.
I never even wanted to lay eyes on him again.
I know, he says quietly. But I killed him anyway. Don't worry, I didn't leave a mess. Nice work on his shoulder, by the way. And there it is, she thinks, the breath going out of her as if she's being gradually squeezed by a giant hand. She figured he'd kept his word, but she'd done everything she could not to linger on the possible details of how. Shouldn't she be flooded with relief to hear that Jason's corpse isn't still lying on her kitchen floor? Well, she isn't. If anything, this seems to have joined her fate to Dylan's. And now you've replaced him, she says.
That's nonsense. You're still in shock.
He said my house was a prison and he was going to set me free. He thought I was valuable too.
Interesting. I wouldn't have called it a prison. I'd say it was a cocoon and you were ready to hatch. Where Jason and I disagreed was on what you should become once you were hatched, and whether or not he should live to see it.
So has Abigail Banning handpicked you to fill his shoes? She asks.
She assumes his long silence means he's simply lost patience for their back and forth. But when he speaks again, his voice sounds reedy, weak, as if, for the first time, she's managed to knock the wind out of him and not the other way around.
You are better than this, he growls.
Better than what? You?
Better than these base insults. I am not.
His attempt to clear his throat actually forces him to cough.
I am not a serial killer, he finally whispers.
Prove it.
How?
Tell me who you really are.
I'm a scientist, and a soldier, and perhaps a bit of a crusader, a revolutionary even, and yes, you are my test subject, and yes, I have very high hopes for you.
He's off balance, and his tongue's gone loose. Was it comparing him to a serial killer that did it? Or just the Bannings? He seems to have no real compunction about murder, and Abigail Banning is about as far from being a Harvard graduate as you can get. Maybe the real Dylan, whoever, is a classist asshole above all else, and she's just discovered his sore point.
So you're a scientist who just happens to have an army of drones or spy satellites or hackers at his disposal? Or are you working with someone who does? Are they scientists, too?
They're one of the wealthiest corporations on the planet. When they put their eyes on you, they cannot be outrun, so don't even try.
And why does this powerful company have its eye on me, Dylan?
Would you like to know my final diagnosis of your situation, Charlie?
I'd like to know what you've signed me up for, again, without my knowledge.
You were waiting. That's what you were doing in that house, with a gun in every room. You were waiting for someone to come after you. That house wasn't a fortress, it was a trap. For them. For whoever came first. That's what was truly plaguing you out there in the desert. Not terror, not dread, not nightmares of your past, but your desire for revenge. Maybe, she thinks. Maybe she went down to that arroyo every evening not just to fine-tune her defensive skills, but to practice for an eventual gratifying kill. People spend their whole lives, their whole professional careers, trying to put a thumbtack through the precise moment fear turns into aggression. No way in hell can she let Dylan distract her with such a vain pursuit now.
Whatever helps you sleep at night, dude.
He laughs.
Why did you call me, Dylan?
Because it's time for you to get to work. Enough with the hometown reunion. I didn't give you those pills to watch you dawdle in Altamira, trying to make an army out of your Uncle Marty's former drunks. And
she hears papers shuffling, the creak of a desk chair.
He's either been handed something or is reading something.
Really?
He says.
Luke Prescott. The asshole from high school? I thought you hated him.
He's grown up to be quite a looker, I'll say that much. Why does this get to her worse than all the other things he said? This suggestion that his surveillance of her, of them, is being updated and expanded even as they speak. Are they all being watched 24/7 now? Kayla, Marty, Luke, and maybe his brother,